Tommy might be glad to. I've been told many times I like to hear the sound of my own voice, so it never bothers me to talk. Maybe that's true. And Sarah, I just want to say the two things that you dropped in this morning have been like little pebbles that have rippled through my plan, my thinking, and have kind of disrupted, but in a nice way. So I'm going to come back to that. Thank you. You know, I came to the, started doing this in 2017, so like, what, 4 or 5 years ago. And it's been a very interesting part of the journey. You know, and I'm not sure how to get started here. My wife told me a couple of months ago that I live in these romantic illusions. She was talking about us, which is true. I like my romantic illusions, although they tend to be more delusional, I think. So maybe that's the part of the issue. And I've come to understand I've lived in lots of illusions. And I don't say that in some kind of self-degradation this way. I say it more just in the sense of like, oh, okay. The retreat that we had recently was really good for me. I wasn't planning on coming. It was kind of just this thing that happened. And I've been very obsessed, and I can't help but be obsessed about my marriage and my career, and I've talked about that. I'm not going to ramble on too much about that. But I was really kind of obsessed with a lot of that last week and this self-reflection that I was stuck in that was becoming a bit much. And so the whole Fox Cohen really helped break that down in a good way, and it was interesting. And then it was interesting, the whole dream thing, because I don't usually do that, and it was happening. Well, last Friday night I had this really horrid dream, quite frankly. I had a rough night. I woke up and couldn't go back to sleep. I had a dream about my wife and the other men in her life, and it was very vivid, and I was really struggling. And when I got up Saturday morning, I was really struggling. And having this helped me to at least focus. And I remembered, interestingly, the red thread coin. And so I grabbed the Murphy book. I talked to Sarah about this. I started reading this. This is one of the ones I got from Steve's pile of books. And I started reading it, and I got stuck, and it was going okay, but not that great. And I stopped reading it. But I remembered, and I went back, you know, and I read the coin. You know, how is it that perfectly accomplished saints and bodhisattvas are still attached to the red thread? And I kind of let that be my meditation last week. There's a lot of sexual stuff and weird stuff and things and my own failures and all blah, blah, blah. And so I read a bit of the book again. I pulled it out and read some of the things. And it also triggers in part of the illusions I think I had when I first came here in 2017. Because I came here to kind of help save my marriage. And, you know, become aware. Become enlightened. You know, and become this better person. Which may have happened. I don't know. We'll see. But that illusion that it's going to be something special and you're going to reach this level of like near perfection. You know, and a lot of that's baggage I have from past religious stuff as well. You know, and one of the things that I really got triggered off as I was reading through, I'm just going to read a couple of quick passages. And this is not new for any of you, I don't think. And it's other, some other places. But enlightenment is not about achieving perfection. I mean, not really, not at least in the tradition that we seem to be here, what I hear from us. And there's this place where she says, waking up is not dying to life, but dying to a narrow view of it. And when it's like I've had this fairly narrow view of what waking up was about. Waking up to its unbounded quality, living into the fact of no self, no other. That's a love story. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. You know, and a few pages over, when you closely examine the dream of purity, it is almost always revealed as an attempt to manage some form of self-hatred founded in fear. And that realization of how much of that baggage is back there. And it wasn't new, but it was just like, oh, again, kind of that. And then I've come in, and I've talked about this, and you guys know this, and so I've come in with this rather Christocentric sense, because I'm a Catholic teacher, I was a teacher, but I'm a Catholic guy, theologian, person, thing, whatever. And Zen has been a big part of that, and it's all kind of one thing for me. Anyway, a good friend of mine, he's kind of he's the guy who's taken over for me at school. He and I have a lot of... He kind of came to Catholicism through Taoism, and I came to Catholicism through Merton. We both came through Merton. So there's a lot of stuff there, a lot of parallels. He's a little bit younger. But anyway, he bought me some books. He bought me these books on these Catholic... This Catholic history in Zen. And one of them, he didn't give it to me, but it's a book. It's called Catholicism, or Zen and Catholicism. And it's kind of this historical thing. And then there's some others. There's a... and I'm going to mispronounce this guy's name... Yamada Roshi, who was one of the main people who handed on his Dharma to all of these Catholic Jesuits. And so this book is this collection of writings from these various Jesuit who come out of that tradition. You know, and so I was, and some of them are the people that I've read in the Book of Mu too. So it was like, Mu. It was like, oh. So he and I had this wonderful conversation. He gave this to me. We were talking about this. And so I found myself this week suddenly re-excited. I haven't been excited about what might be. And I've missed what might be for a long time. I've been stuck so much in like what is. And the other thing I want to say about that is... last year, I don't know if it was a mini weekend retreat because of COVID or one of the Cohen sessions, but when Sarah first brought in the poem, Whatever Happens, Whatever What is whatever, that flipped me upside down, over, under, sideways, down, to quote an old rock and roll song. And I was like, I mean... That has become this kind of shaking thing in my whole world. And part of it was this internal, this I had to do this intellectual fight even then. I've spent most of my life fighting what is. I remember this morning, as a matter of fact. I had a high school teacher who told me in 12th grade, you're going to beat your head against the wall. You're just going to have a bloody head. You're just going to do it all your life. And... kind of right. I've kind of done that. and I've operated under the belief, which might be some illusion and whatever. You know, it goes back to that whole, and I don't want to get too stuck here, that whole idealistic thing from, you know, when Kennedy goes, some people look at things as they are and say, why? I look at things why they could be and say, why not? Why not look at what could be? So I've always been stuck in what could be. I think that's what my wife meant about the illusion. And so there's this awareness I've been sitting with several weeks, months. The last 5 months have been really interesting. Because last year when I kind of got taken up with this whole what is, I've really been plunged into what is the last 6 months. I think losing my career and losing my marriage... The disintegration of those things is, it's disintegrating a lot of stuff. And what seems to also be maybe disintegrating are some of the illusions. And there's a lot of sadness and stuff there, normally there would be a lot of anger. There's not a lot of anger. There probably is a little. You know, I keep trying. Maybe I'm whistling in the dark that I'm not angry, because there are moments. You know, I have this internal teenager named Spike that I have conversations with early in the morning. Spike's pissed off. He wants to go in, kick open the door, and start yelling at my wife. He wants to go to school, kick open the door, and start yelling at the principal. And I just like, okay, you just need to sit over here and calm down, and we're going to get through this. That was last week's Fox Cohen, by the way. I had a long talk with Spike in that one. Coming to understand that and trying to live in that in a way, it's interesting. My wife, for all of our dialogues, our lack of dialogues, I said something about Joan Sutherland one time, a quote or something, I don't know what it was, and Ryan said, oh, that name sounds familiar. Anyway, Ryan has been getting the Cloud Dragon email or something for, she didn't know who that was or whatever, she just found it one time, liked what she read, and so she started getting it. So she sends them to me. And so she sent me the one Thursday night, and I was looking at it, thinking, because after Will, you know, I got to come up with something to talk about. I was looking for some things, and so I pulled up the blog or whatever you want to call this that Joan sent out, and Brian sent it to me Thursday, and you know, it's got the two birds and a frog talk on the bottom. So I read through that; it's kind of interesting. And then there's that coin there. There is an ocean of bright clouds. There is an ocean of solemn clouds. And what that does for me, how that comes to me is, that's the both and that my Catholicism is built in. Not an either or, but a both and. I was kind of raised in either or, and I kind of lived in a whole, I used to love to fight about either or. You're either on this side or that side. You're either right or you're wrong, and I'm going to be right. You're either on one side or the other. And over the last, at least what I've liked or wanted to believe, is that I've tried to evolve this both in, and in some ways I have, not very well, but I'm really finding that very much nurtured here. And so I think, and I was finding it in some of the readings, so for me that's that parallel between Zen and Catholicism. Percy, your talk last week, by the way, is just nothing else than pure Catholic social justice. You know, and it's true, and you bring it, and you mesh in it, and it's great, you know, and so it's there. And it's also part of this tradition. I'm going to read a couple of things if my tablet doesn't mess up. This is from Jones reading. Zen sticks close to what is possible to know, acknowledging how much it isn't possible to know, and not speculating much about that. Well, I like to speculate about that, so I have to. That's kind of part of my struggle. It doesn't encourage us to speculate much about the unknowable either, but it does ask us to have the courage to accept the essential mystery of the world. So maybe I don't have to speculate and argue. Maybe I have to learn how to live in the mystery, or in the mess. Actually, that's kind of what I liked by Murphy's point. She was talking about you just live in the mess. That's where enlightenment is. Pema Chodron said some of the same things. Enlightenment is not living in this perfection space above everything. It's actually living in the mess. And then it kind of goes on, you know. And then she brings in, she goes, it's possible to understand, to categorize that penetrating and in some way disturbing truth of Dungeons, there is an ocean of bright clouds, there is an ocean of solid clouds. And so I was like, oh, okay. Okay, maybe. I haven't been too happy. I haven't been too happy most of my life, quite frankly. But I haven't been too happy the past 6 months. The that beating my head against the wall thing and that illusions, you know, I'm aware I'm also a very stubborn alcoholic. I bring a lot of that. You know, there are three threads of spirituality in my life. One comes out of AA, which is where I got sober years ago and that initiated it. The other one comes out of this Catholic sensibility or this, and actually it's even more than that. It's actually a deeper kind of Christocentric thing that goes way back. And then the third one is this, and this has been there for a long time as well. And I'm aware of how they've grown and how they've at times been frayed. You know, but even in the fraying, they seem to kind of still be there, which is kind of nice. So I always like the idea of a thread, as a thread. And what I wanted to jump to, because I could ramble on, but I'm going to stop. Your question this morning, Sarah, what is this? Well, what hit me with that is, what is this? And what this is, for me, this is Sangha. This, I'm one of those people that likes to be part of groups, but on the edge. I always kind of stand back on the edge. I'm one of those guys with my back to the wall watching the door. But I'm close to it. In my AA, in my church, it's always there. You know, I don't participate in a lot of other Sangha stuff. I go bits and pieces. I really like the retreats, some of the stuff. You know, the Cohen work, sometimes I'm lost. I go and I listen and I'm lost sometimes. It's like there seems to be a depth of dialogue there that I try to pick up on it. I think I do better when I read it to myself or when I sit and talk about it. But it comes. I remember when I first came, and it was a Monday night, and Mary, you introduced me to what I had to do. And you gave this quick little instruction. I sat there in the chair in that hallway on Monday night, and I was intimidated, and I didn't know what was going on, and it's like, what the hell are you doing here? And then it's like, oh. But it felt okay, and you were very welcoming. And so that welcoming really worked. And then Saturday mornings I started coming, and there was like this welcoming sense. Even there wasn't a lot of people. Maybe that's part of it. There wasn't a lot of people who would get up and go to Shove Chapel at 6:30 on a Saturday morning. And I lived down the street and would ride my bike. And I loved it the first year. I'd ride my bike there. You know, it was really great, especially those cold mornings. So by the time I got there, I was very awake. But this is Sangha for me. And this is, you know, I focus a lot on taking refuge and awakening and taking refuge in the way. And I probably don't, or I take for granted taking refuge in my companions. But this is you are my companions. And so Saturday morning is real important. That's kind of how I wanted to end, since I'm going to be leaving here in about 4 weeks. And I have no idea how I'm going to, I mean, I know I'll be able to make contact through, you know, Zoom. I just have to figure out how that's going to set up and time-wise and everything else and the space, because here I have some privacy and space, even though this is a real little room. You guys don't really get this. I set this up on Friday nights and everything is pushed against the wall over here and the workout bench is pushed up. So I got to figure out everything. You know, when Kelly and Catherine were showing me how to set up the altar and how to lead. And so becoming part of that, and this just becomes such an integral part. What is this? This is the beginning of my weekend. This is the beginning of my Saturday. This is the end of my week. This is the beginning of my next week. This is like one of those times that are incredibly important in being connected. And I'll end with this. I'll share this real quick because I know I'm kind of rambling. I have a couple of peers. They're older guys. They're kind of, well, I'm the oldest, but they're younger. The three of us were let go or left school. And a couple of them, I got a buddy who's having a real hard time. You know, he's 60, I think 63, 64. You know, he's been teaching for a long time. We all liked teaching at St. Mary's because for a long time, we taught at what we could argue was the best high school in town. And they let us do it on our own. We weren't micromanaged. We had an administration that trusted its teachers and said, here's the deal, do this, and we did it, and we did it well. And we had a community of that. He's missing that. You know, I'm missing it, but he's, so there are people he's really, and anyway, I was talking to him, and he asked me something about AA, and do I still go, and yes, and I said I do. I was just aware of the importance of having something else in my life. Having community that way too often gets taken for granted. And knowing that you have it is just really, it's just such an important connection. And I was just trying to share that with him. And so I thought about that last night. And I guess, you know, that's where I kind of wanted to end this on. I have taken lots of refuge in my companions. And I don't even know a lot of them. You know, you guys were my first responders when I had COVID. And you were, and you brought soups and stuff and things and ginger tea and all this stuff. You know, and people I didn't even know showed up and left it on my door. You know, and Linda was like back and forth and emailing me and all the days. And, you know, Sarah would touch base and people would check in. You know, and I had other people as well, other friends. But it always impressed me that the first line of response to my to that came from this, came from you. And what a gift. You know, what a gift. You know, and just coming to terms with the depths of living in, and how do you live in what is? And part of living in what is having some connection with others that allows you to live. It's a, you know, I love what Kelly made this point at the retreat. It's a difficult time, and it's way too easy to become overwhelmed by it's a difficult time. But I think it's always been a difficult time for some people. You know, that's the reality. Life is just difficult. It just is. You know, and the grace of Zen that I'm living in, or that I've been given in the last several years, is finding a way to live in that, trying to minimize the illusions and be okay with what is, and not have to find some perfect place of enlightenment that you have to escape. And I'm really grateful for that, you know, and it goes with me. So thank you. And that's it.